so hard, my bass and fun.
Read so hard, library's trying to find me. They can't identify me. Checked in with a pseudonym, so I guess you could say I'm Mark Twaining. Read so hard,
that shit cray.
That shit cray.
Ain't it, eh?
Read so hard,
what you reading?
What you reading?
D-Montaigne.
Read
so hard,
you use a Kindle? I carry spines, supporting bookshelves like a bra. Calvin Klein.
Hi, you're listening to Drunk Booksellers. My name is Kim.
And I'm Emma.
And we are professional booksellers.
And casual drinkers.
This is episode 3, and today we have the pleasure to be interviewing Kevin Samsel, who is a bookseller at Powell's Books in Portland, Oregon. He's also the small press buyer there. In addition to that, he's a publisher of the small press, Future Tense Books, an author for a memoir, pornography, as well as a novel that just came out a couple years ago called This Is Between Us.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Our literary drink today was actually suggested and designed, designed by Kevin. So Kevin, I'm going to let you introduce our drink of the night.
Okay, well, my usual drink is whiskey and Coke. And my friend and fellow author, Patrick DeWitt, has a drink that is mentioned or talked about in his first book called Ablutions. It's this story about this bartender who is kind of having a hard time and dealing with these crazy people at the bar he works at in LA, like in the Hollywood area. And so he has like all these regulars that come in for drinks, and he drinks himself on the job. The Jameson Irish whiskey with ginger ale is the bartender's drink of choice. And there's a scene where this regular guy who's always kind of pestering people, and he asks the bartender, like, what do you got there? Like, I want to have what you're having. And the bartender says, this isn't a drink, this is a lifestyle. And the guy says, oh, that's great, I'll have a lifestyle. And so from then on, the guy calls the drink a lifestyle.
Do you go to bars and request a lifestyle and then seem offended when they don't know what that means?
No, I don't do that at bars.
Read so hard, library's trying to find me.
That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
So, Emma, what are you reading right now?
Currently, I'm reading Witches of America by Alex Marr, which comes out on October 20th, and it's a nonfiction book about witches living in America.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm also reading a book that's coming out in September right now, Furiously Happy, which is Jenny Lawson's new bio. Jenny Lawson's best known for Let's Pretend This Never Happened, which is just a fantastically hilarious book about her life in taxidermied animals. But in Furiously Happy, she really delves into her issues with depression and general anxiety and all the other slew of things that she's been diagnosed with. It's literally laugh out loud funny, and I never say that about a book because I'm not that person who laughs out loud while reading, except with this where I'm like giggling to myself like on the bus, which is creepy. And also, Emma, you'll appreciate this. I just started Argonauts today, so I'm
good.
About I don't know, a third of the way through that right now, and it's so good, and I'm the worst for not reading it until now. So,
yeah, I still haven't read that yet either. I do want to read it, though. I saw her read at Bad Blood, which is a really great reading series here in Portland. Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, the way that she navigates the queer space in a way that's not stereotypical in any way is really impressive to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think really refreshing and important when we have a lot of just like very mainstreamy queer narratives happening. Which, again, I say as I'm also like had just finished Trans by Juliet Jakes, which is coming out in a couple months as well, which is a fantastic trans narrative about like how we need to not be boxing people into these stereotypes of their marginalized identities, which is exactly what she talks about in Argonaut. So it's great stuff.
Have you read George yet?
No, it's sitting on my coffee table right now.
Kevin, have you heard of George?
No. What's that about?
It's a chapter book coming out from Scholastic that's just about, like, a transgender girl, and I'm super excited about it. I'm pushing it really hard because it's just, like, it is literally written for 8 to 12-year-olds.
Oh,
like,
wow.
It's not flowery or, like, it's not like Fairyland where it feels like it's for adults. It's, like, a transgender book for kids.
Yeah.
Well, and we rarely see that under the YA range because it is not appropriate, I guess, subject matter for middle grade, according to, you know, the universe. But
not yet.
Yeah, not yet. But it's super important to see a middle grade novel that is directly, like, discussing and relating to trans issues, which is it's just so cool.
You know, one of the books that I published on my press as a chapbook called Please Don't Kill the Freshman by Zoe Trope, she ended up getting a lot of attention for that book, and we sold the rights to a longer version of the book to Harper Tempest, which was a YA publisher. She expanded the book, and they published it. Like, this has been a while ago now. It's like 2003, I think, when that came out, and they marketed it as a YA book, and we were sort of like, you know, initially surprised because we didn't know like what YA entailed at that time. And there's a lot of like swearing in her book, and there's a lot of like sexual stuff, and then she also talks about like being queer, and she talks about transgender stuff. She talks about like her girlfriend becoming a boy, and you know, I think at the time it felt like there wasn't a lot of books in the YA field sort of talking about that, and so I feel like I should give props to Zoe Trope for being sort of a pioneer in that kind of narrative for YA books.
I actually read that book as a teenager. And it was my first experience with, like, queerness. And it really kind of changed my whole perspective on sexuality and that sort of thing. It's really funny that you bring it up. That was literally my favorite book.
Yeah. I think it was a lot of people's favorite books. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't, like, a bestseller or anything. But I feel like that was a really inspiring, influential book for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's just so raw and just unlike anything else that was being put out at that time.
Yeah, I was really excited to be part of that story. She's a really special person.
Emma, was this the book that you were telling about that Kevin's a character in?
Yeah, that was actually the first time I encountered you in the literary sphere.
Oh, yeah.
Greasy Buddy Holly.
That's me, Greasy Buddy Holly. That was funny.
Awesome.
Yeah. Oh, I was gonna say too, if I can add one more thing to the to the queer trans book
please.
Discussion. One of projects that I've been doing recently for Future Tense, which is my press publishing company, small press, is we're doing this ebook series. This is slightly outside of the normal bookseller realm, I guess, but we're doing this ebook series called Instant Future. We've published three books on that so far, and they're all like these kind of short things. They're sort of like not quite chapbook shortness, but like not quite, you know, like paperback book length. They're probably like 40 to 50 page reads, you know.
So like novella sort of.
Yeah, a little bit. And one of the books that we just published recently is a book called Being by Zach Ellis, who is a really great transgender writer. And Kim, you might know Zach.
Yeah, totally. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's a really great, fantastic writer. Very kind of shy and modest about his talents, but he's so good, and his little ebook is really special. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there too. So people should look for Zach Ellis.
Kevin, what are you reading right now?
Oh gosh, I'm kind of doing that annoying thing where I have like 8 books that I'm reading all at the same time, you know?
Sure.
But when I find myself doing that, I just have to tell myself like, okay, like stop adding books and just like start finishing some of them.
What a concept.
Yeah, exactly. So I recently finished reading The Revolution of Every Day by Carrie Luna, who's a Portland writer. It's a book published by Tin House. Came out right around the same time as my book, actually. And she won the Oregon Book Award for best novel for that book. And that book is super good. It's kind of like not the usual kind of thing that I read. It's about like these like squatters in New York, and it has, you know, this kind of socio-political thing going on. But, you know, besides all that, it's just about the people and them living in this building and kind of their inner lives and the whole thing of them eventually having to battle the city for the building and stuff. And it's really good. It's just one of those books that makes you kind of see into other people's lives that you might not necessarily know about. So that was really wonderful. Another book that I recently finished was Savage Park, which is a book by Amy Fusselman, who's a really beautiful writer, very warm, kind of generous style of writing. And it's a really interesting nonfiction book. It's about kind of like a bunch of things, but it's mainly about how she went to Japan and discovered this like crazy park there where there's just all of this. It's almost like a junkyard or something. There's all this stuff that almost seems like it would be really dangerous, you know? Like the kids and stuff just go crazy for it, and it's just like this place of discovery. And she kind of uses that as a jumping off point for talking about taking chances in life and feeling safe and, like, you know, the whole concept of play. And it's really beautiful. I really, really like that book. I just really like Amy's style of writing. Besides that, the current stuff, Lydia Yuknovich, her book. Super good. It kind of like threw me off a little bit at the beginning of the book because it's really, there's a lot of similarities to the memoir. Mm-hmm. And I was sort of like distracted by that a little bit, but I'm like a little more than halfway through that right now, and I'm really liking it. And
yeah, we talked about that a bit last episode. Emma mm-hmm. just read Chronology of Water finally.
Oh yeah.
I've been telling her to for like 2 years.
I'm also reading Hollywood Notebook by Wendy Ortiz. Mm-hmm. And she's is a Los Angeles writer. I published her memoir last year called Excavation. That's become like the best-selling book I've ever published on my press. But she has a new book that just came out called Hollywood Notebook, and it's really great. It's sort of like it is sort of like a notebook. It's sort of like reading like somebody's journals, you know. I'm about halfway through that and really enjoying that. Oh, also there's this really cool book, this like really funny short novel called Cult of Loretta. And it's by this Portland guy. His name is Kevin Maloney. That's probably like my favorite book of all the books I've read the last couple months. It's so funny. It's set in like 90s Portland. So there's like mentions of like La Luna and like, you know, play these like different clubs around Portland at the time. And it's like narrated by this guy. He's in a band and, you know, he's kind of a druggie, or at least he's, you know, kind of a stoner kind of dude. And mm-hmm. he gets, you know, seduced by this woman who, I guess, you know, kind of seduces lots of guys around town. It's kind of a succubus. mm-hmm. And it's just really, really funny. You know, like how sometimes you start a book that just reminds you, like, oh yeah, like reading can be like super fun, you know. Uh-huh. Like you just read something and it's like, it's not like, you know, super serious or super like stylized or whatever. It's just like a super fun thing to read.
It's so important to be able to get to those books too, because
yeah.
like, we spend so much time as booksellers and then just as readers, like really focusing on, okay, this is going to be the big book, so I need to read this and I need to read this, etc. And like being able to kind of reevaluate and like refresh your reading through something like that is
yeah.
really important.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like the same way about you know, people like Adam Wilson.
Yeah.
You know, like his short stories are like super funny and like just super like really fun to read, but like they're just like kind of like they're just like just goofy enough where like maybe they won't get nominated for like the American Book Award or whatever, you know. It's like
yeah.
you know, it's not quite serious enough. They're just like, you can tell that they're just like goofing around sometimes and just making up like the craziest stuff, you know.
That's a lot of good books.
Yeah, that was that's gonna be
yeah,
okay,
I could
for
go
everybody
on.
Listening for everybody listening, all of that will be in the show notes, so
yeah.
go find those. What's everybody excited about for August? Emma, do you have things that you're really psyched for? I know that we'll probably not get this out until mid-August at that point, but let's pretend.
I mean, the books will still be available.
It's true.
I guess the biggest thing I'm excited for is The Beautiful Bureaucrat by Helen Phillips, which I haven't read yet, but all of the people that are praising it on the back are pretty awesome, especially Ramona Ossible has a quote there. I basically looked at the back and I was like, oh, Kevin Brockmeyer, Jenny Offal, Leslie Jameson, I'm going to really like this book.
There you go.
So I picked it up at BEA.
There you go.
What about you?
Tin House has The Scamp coming out, which I'm about halfway through right now. I'm excited about that, mostly because I love Tin House's stuff, and it's very raw, like...
Yeah.
Female protagonist driven narrative, which is fantastic.
That cover.
The I know, right? The cover is intense.
Let me know if I make too much noise because I want to make, I have to refresh my drink.
Yeah, no, go for it, man. It's the drunk booksellers. Drink noises are totally acceptable. We just had Voices in the Ocean, the new Susan Casey came out, which after I finish listening to Argonauts, I'm going to listen to that. It's about dolphins.
I haven't heard of that. Oh, wait. I mean, if you're going to say more than one, Atessa Mushfeg's new book is coming out, Eileen. I'm not reading it, and I haven't read anything she's written, but my partner, Sean, is, like, really into it right now.
Oh, I had a galley of that I gave away.
Sad story.
Don't you hate that when you have galleys and then you, like, give them away and you're like, oh, man.
I really want to read that.
I guess I have to buy the book now. Yeah. Womp womp.
I have a funny story about that Scamp book.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that as booksellers, we can all relate to this.
Of course.
It has such a great cover,
mm-hmm.
but I think sometimes, and it's not even like really risque or anything, but it's funny that sometimes you have these customers that will sort of be bothered or kind of take offense at like a book's cover,
uh-huh.
and they'll turn the book around so that it's, so that the back cover is being displayed on the shelf. It's so weird.
It totally happens though. You're totally
right. It happens
all
the time in bookstores. If there's like any sort of naked body part on a book cover and it's being faced out, you'll see people like turn the book around. I don't know, it's really funny. You know what else, like when people turn book covers around? The other thing that, besides like sexy covers that people turn around, it's funny when people turn around books by like political people or whatever. Like when Bill Clinton's book came out, or you know, or Hillary Clinton or whoever, and they turn the book around so that you can't see the face or whatever. Like that's gonna.
I saw that happen like Bill O'Reilly books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bill yeah. O'Reilly.
All the liberals in Portland are like, nah.
Yeah.
We don't want that.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack. Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack.
Tell us about your store, which is Powell's Books, and what you do there.
Powell's is, I think, the largest bookstore in the country. I think maybe even the world. There was a little bit of debate about that recently because...
I think if you qualify it with largest new and used independent bookstore, then you're correct in the world.
One of the things I heard was that the one store that was supposedly bigger was like Barnes & Noble in somewhere in New York, one of the huge Barnes & Nobles there. And then they closed like a year ago or something.
Okay.
So then I, you know, there was some email just recently at work that said like, oh, because this store closed and this other store just closed, we're now officially, you know, like without any argument, the biggest bookstore in the world. But anyway, Powell's is a very large bookstore in Portland, Oregon. It takes up a whole city block. It's new and used. There's a few hundred people that work there.
Wow.
We've been around for 40 something years, and I don't think that there's any real threat for us to go away. You know, like sometimes I've worked there for 17 years. It's funny to have people come in and say things like, well, aren't you, isn't Amazon putting you guys out of business? Or, you know, like...
Love that question.
Yeah, or like, you know, like maybe like 10 years ago, people would say that about Borders and stuff too. Like, oh, there's a big Borders downtown, you know, that's opening up. Powell's better watch out. And, you know, that store was open for 5 years and closed down. Anyway, so it's, you know, it's really busy. It's summer now. And summer's like a really busy time for us, actually.
Big tourist spot.
Yeah, it's a big tourist spot. It's pretty crazy, you know. I mean, like, it's you know, it's, but it's really inspiring too, on, in a lot of ways, not just for us as booksellers and for regular customers who come in and, you know, always find something to buy, but it's inspiring, I think, for people that come in that are, you know, in town for the first time, or, you know, who are visiting and have never been to Powell's and haven't really known what it's about, you know?
I mean, those are my first experiences in Portland, was going there in order to visit Powell's.
Yeah.
Which then is not shocking that I then end up working at Powell's, like, the second I showed up in Portland.
Yeah.
So, it's a pretty formative experience for, I think, most people visiting the city.
Because I think sometimes they're even more overwhelmed than they expected they would be. They come in and they're like, wait, they're like, whoa, this is big, you know? It's
like, and Powell's legitimately produces a map in order to find your way around the store.
Yeah.
Speaking from experience, I was there for the very first time, probably around this time last year, and I was just, I mean, I was lucky that Kim set me up with someone who worked there just to show us around, otherwise I would have gotten lost.
Yeah. It is funny because people are like, what are the different rooms for, you know, and one of the other, like, kind of funny questions that people ask at Powell's is, where's the nonfiction section? And then,
which is a question you get at every bookstore, but at Powell's it seems, like, particularly, like, well, let's have a check here.
Yeah.
It's especially hilarious.
Yeah. So it's like, well, basically the rest of the store besides this room you're currently in. So, I don't know. I've been there for a long time. I started off as a holiday, like, Christmas temp. You know, like, I was just, like, hired to help out with the Christmas rush. I started doing event stuff at one of the satellite stores, like the one in Beaverton, which is, like, a suburb of Portland. And I think at the time, like, I was, like, maybe the only person working there that was really interested in doing, like, the event stuff. So,
it's a rough gig.
Yeah, so I was lucky. I was like, oh, nobody else wants to do this. I'll do this. And it basically just meant that, you know, they had to keep me. I wasn't just a temp or whatever. So I do a lot of the event stuff still, but I also work in the Blue Room, which has, like, literature and poetry and the small press section, which is a section that I ran for a long time. I feel like it's a really unique section. As far as bookstores go, we carry a lot of stuff from really small presses that you normally wouldn't see in other bookstores, and so I'm really proud to do that part of the job at the store, and to sort of, like, you know, support a lot of writers and presses that are normally would go totally under the radar at other bookstores. Yeah, it's really fantastic, and I feel like it's kind of a draw for people to. I've definitely met a bunch of people shopping the small press section, and I'll just kind of go over there, and I can kind of tell, like, it's somebody who hasn't been there before, and they're kind of like, there's this sort of, like, kind of frantic energy about them, you know, like oh my god, what do I look at, you know? And so it's really fun to meet those people and you know, kind of give them the lay of the land and give them recommendations and stuff like that.
I actually bought the book White Elephants from your small press section last year, and I read it in, like, 24 hours. It was amazing. I can't remember who it was by. It was just about a woman. She wrote zines, and then that was, like, a collection of the zines, and they were just about, like, trash picking and going to yard sales and, like, purchasing stuff at yard sales.
Oh, yeah, I think I do remember that, yeah. Yeah, you were talking earlier, you were talking about reading the witch book.
Yeah, Witches of America.
Yeah, I was going to say, too, that reminds me, there's a Portland poet who has been working on this poetry book about witches, or maybe it's, like, you know, one of those book-length poems or whatever. I think it's called The Weird Sisters.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think it comes out sometime next year, so a little bit a ways away, but it's by this Portland poet who I really, really love, named James Gendron, and he has a book that I always recommend to people in the small press section called Sexual Boats, Sex Boats.
And
yeah, it's published by Octopus Books, which is a really great small press book.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sexual Boat is a super good book by James Gendron. So his witch book is coming out probably next year, and I've heard him read parts of it, and it's really great and weird and funny.
So 17 years, the bookseller at Powell's. Did you work in bookstores before Powell's, or?
No, I lived in Portland 5 years, I guess, at that point. And when I first moved to Portland, I was doing an espresso cart business.
Like you do in Portland.
My girlfriend at the time, her and I started this espresso cart. We bought an espresso cart off of a friend. And we bought another one later, and we had like these two espresso carts, and we ran those for about 5 years. And then I got the job at Powell's, because we're closing our carts down, and so
just stuck.
Yeah, so that was great. I mean, I feel really lucky to get the job, because I know like tons of people apply to work at Powell's, and even people that have like master's degrees and stuff don't get jobs a lot of times. And I know some people get really unhappy that they never get jobs or interviews, but it's tough, you know. A lot of people want to work there. And
I mean, real talk, it took me I think I applied 7 times before I heard back.
Wow.
I was committed.
So Kevin, did working at Powell's like, was that when you decided to be a career bookseller, or did you want to be a bookseller before then?
You know, I think I always loved Powell's. When I first moved to Portland and stuff, that was one of the reasons why I moved to Portland, because I really loved Powell's from the first time I visited, which, you know, was only a few years before that. But I don't know if I really thought about it like, oh, I'm going to be here for a long time.
Right.
But I think it makes sense for me in a lot of ways, because I didn't go to college or do like I don't have an academic background. So even though I'm a writer and editor and stuff, I don't have like the kind of background or credentials that I could use to be a teacher, you know. And I've actually never really been super interested in teaching, and I know a lot of my writer friends are teachers. And at the same time, I didn't know if I wanted to be a writer or like a copywriter or anything like that. Mm-hmm. For a job. And I just before I started working at Powell's, I coordinated some readings around town. There was a couple of cafes, and I would have like a couple of different reading series. This is like in the, you know, mid-90s. And
were you already publishing Future Tense then?
Yeah, I started Future Tense like even before I moved to Portland. And it was basically just kind of like a vanity thing, you know, like I was publishing my own little chapbooks, and I just decided to put Future Tense on them. So I did that for a couple of years, and then I think it wasn't until I moved to Portland that I started to meet other writers, specifically poets, that I really liked a lot and felt a connection to. And I was like, oh, you should do a chapbook, you know. You should do one of these things like I do, like type up your poems on your typewriter and then cut them and glue stick them onto this other paper and
there you go.
Photocopy
and I will
them.
Distribute them.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, yeah, it started off really lo-fi, very lo-fi for the first couple of years, and kind of got serious, you know, a little bit more serious as time went on. So it's funny to think that Future Tense started like 25 years ago. But yeah, I don't know. I just really like working at Powell's. I love being a bookseller. I love like being around all the books and like seeing like all the stuff that's coming out. Just being on the inside of all of that is super exciting for me. Even though it's just like a bookseller thing, you know, I don't like make a lot of money. It's not like, you know, it's not like
it's a labor of love.
Yeah, and I see a lot of friends there, and I make a lot of friends there. I just really love it. You know, it's being a bookseller is great. If I wasn't working at Powell's, I would, you know, work at another bookstore, or work had a publishing house or something, I don't know what I would do.
So how do you feel, like, as a publisher and bookseller, how do you navigate the two of those identities?
I think the bookseller thing is, like, that's, you know, that's my paycheck. Being a publisher, it's more like, you know, an artistic endeavor. It's more like a labor of love. I don't want to, and I feel like this about my writing a little bit too. I don't want to put myself into a position where I have to make money as a publisher or as a writer. And have to support myself in that way, because I feel like it would put too much pressure on me, and also it would maybe take some of the fun out of it, you know, like, oh, I have to do this and I have to do this, and I mean, I'm kind of like that already, but most of the stuff that I'm doing, like, you know, about the 10 different things I'm doing, it's like, okay, I gotta publish this book, I have to edit this book, you know, I have to write this story for this person, and you know, I'm probably not really seeing very much money from that stuff, but I love doing it, and I love getting it done, and I love producing these things and creating these things, not just for myself, but for, you know, for other people, of course.
On my table right now, I've got 3 books by you, one of which you published through Future Tense, one of which was published most recently through Ten House, and the other one was Harper Perennial. Like, how do you see the publishing world within the context of this, like, micro press through, like, an indie press through Harper, who is one of the big 5?
I really like a lot of the big presses do too, you know. I mean, I know that there's, like, if you're looking at HarperCollins or Simon & Schuster or whatever, they're putting out, like, you know, whatever it is, 50 books a month, 100 books a month, I don't really know. You know, within that huge mountain of things they're putting out, there's, like, super, super good stuff that they're putting out. I don't think that just because somebody publishes on a really big press, or just because, like, a reader only reads stuff published by big presses, I don't think that makes them foolish or makes it like they're missing out on something. But I do think that a lot of the stuff that's coming out of small presses is really daring, you know, maybe more daring than some of the big press stuff. Well, the big presses are discovering a lot of their great writers because they publish on a small press to begin with. I mean, that's just kind of the way that it's become. There's so many really good small presses that have emerged in the past 10 years. It's a really important development that those presses exist, because now you do have a lot of people who are writing really great stuff and really interesting stuff and, like, unusual and, you know, maybe experimental, that wouldn't necessarily have that home in the past, you know. So you have people like, you know, like Alyssa Nutting, you know, her first book was published by Start Your Own Small Press. Lindsay Hunter, who I totally adore, you know, her first book was published by Featherproof. And, you know, now she's on FSG. And I can kind of spot them, I think, too, like working in the small press section at Powell's. I can always get a feeling when someone is gonna, like, move on to, like, a big press, and that's and that's one of my favorite parts of the job too, running that section. It's like, oh, like, this person's book is really popular, and all these people are coming to the small press section for this person's book. And I think bigger presses are picking up on that a little bit, and bigger presses are seeing, you know, people like Maggie Nelson, you know, get all of this attention for a little book that they published on Wave, or, you know, some other small press like that, and they're like, wow, this, you know, we should pay attention to these people. Yeah, and it goes the other way around a little bit too. Sometimes you'll see people who have really great books published by bigger presses, and then, you know, maybe you won't hear from them for a few years, and then, like, their next book is on, like, some kind of, like, weird little small press. And it's like, well, maybe that's because they, you know, quote unquote, only sold, you know, 2,000 copies of their book, and it's just too strange or whatever, like, you know. But maybe those 2,000 books inspired 2,000 writers, you know. You know, you have these people who are publishing these kind of strange things, and sometimes they're better suited for a small press audience.
That kind of happened with you from, you published your memoir with Harper Perennial, and then your novel was published with Tin House.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, and it's funny because if people ask me like what the experiences were, you know, like what was like working with HarperCollins and what was like working with Tin House, they're not that dissimilar from each other. HarperCollins, or, you know, like if you're talking about Random House or any place like that, you know, they're probably going to do a pretty good job of promoting your book. But sure. Behind all that is that they have more money, you know, so they have they have more money. There's a little bit more leeway. There's more ability to push a book. And maybe a press like Tin House or Future Tense or whatever might not have a big advertising budget. They have to figure out other ways to promote it. I get the feeling that my book with Tin House probably sold just as much as my book with HarperCollins, you know, which isn't like a ton, but I feel like they both got about the same amount of attention. I feel like there's not a huge gap with that stuff, especially these days. Smaller presses have just as much power than bigger presses.
Yeah, with the internet, I mean.
Yeah, the internet and distribution is a little bit better.
Speaking of internet, Future Tense started in ebook imprint, and I'd love to hear what you have to say about the role of ebooks within the context of the publishing world, but also within the context of a bookseller world, where bookstores do sell ebooks mostly through Kobo.
But only
like that,
really
but
to not, those people who are in the know.
Yeah, it's a pretty, like, not a lot of people know about it, so ebooks are really, like, generally an Amazon-centric thing. And so what does it mean to you to, like, be a publisher that has an ebook imprint and also be a bookseller, knowing that that is a thing that you
your competition, yeah.
Because you've got some really exciting things. Like, the thing I want to talk about earlier is, like, Alyssa Washuda, who we talked about in our first episode. Mm-hmm. My partner had picked up My Body is a Book of Rules from one of our stores that we visited on the first episode and is absolutely loved it. And you've published her novella, memoir?
It's kind of like a, we like to call them mini memoirs.
There you go.
Starvation Mode by Alyssa. It's super good. You know, just like we try to do with Future Tense, I'm trying to put stuff out there that I really like myself and I think is really interesting and I think deserves attention and deserves, like, an audience. And part of it is, you know, it's kind of, it is an experiment in a sense, because they're not physical books. But one of the reasons that this idea attracted us to try this was because there's not a lot of overhead. So we can kind of put quote unquote books out into the world that normally we might not be able to do because we can't afford to publish everything we want to publish. Yeah, it's just kind of an experiment too, to kind of feel out the whole ebook world a little bit. There's a lot of people who put out ebooks and they kind of turn out to be big sensations and then they get like big publishing deals and stuff. I don't know if the stuff that we're putting out is necessarily
the next 50 Shades
in
of Grey.
That, yeah, exactly. It's not really that genre. It's a little bit more literary minded. So we're sort of like going down a little bit of a dark alley with some of this stuff, but you know, it gives those authors a chance to have something out there, and we always hope that our authors that we publish go on to do other stuff. We know that Future Tense is a limited thing. You know, we're like a farm league baseball team, or you know, like you know, or like a small record label. We're just trying to give people, books, authors, a little boost.
I feel like that's the quintessential bookseller's role in life as well, is like to take something that people wouldn't necessarily see and put it out there for people to like to notice and to fall in love with and then to do what they will with.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Do you read ebooks, Kevin?
No.
Neither do I.
I mean, when the Instant Future stuff is coming out, you know, of course I get the PDFs and stuff and proofread them and stuff. But I don't have like a Kindle or anything like that.
Well, certainly not.
So I have too many books. I mean, I'm surrounded by books right now at home. So yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I download all of the e-galleys that I can, and then I never
read
them.
I don't understand why you don't read them.
I of the time I'm reading all these physical books.
I think it would be good if you, I can see the purpose. I mean, I can see how people, if you have like an iPhone or Kindle or something that you can carry around and read stuff on, and you're going on a trip or something, I can totally see how that would be really convenient.
Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack. Read so hard, libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
I'm gonna refer to an earlier question, but you talked about August books coming out. And at first I was sort of like, what has come out? But I just remembered that the other day when I was at the info desk in the blue room by the poetry section at Powell's, I noticed that the James Tate book was out now, his new collection.
And I picked that up. That is a great cover.
Yeah. And I picked that up and started reading that, and it's really great. So I'll probably be reading the rest of that sometime soon. Sadly, you know, he died recently, but he's been one of my favorite poets for a long time, so super excited that we got you know, another book from him. And also that there's a new Ben Marcus anthology that he edited, the New American Short Story or something like that.
Kelly Link is in that.
Yeah, there's so much good stuff in that. And he edited a book probably like 10 or 15 years ago called the Anchor Book of New American Fiction. And that was also like, they're basically just kind of like, okay, you want something unusual, something kind of weird. They're just like the perfect thing to give to people who are looking for stuff like that, you know, whether they're George Saunders fans or Kurt Vonnegut or Kelly Link, you know, it's like, oh, should read this Ben Marcus book, you know. But anyway, I've probably read like half of the stories in that anthology already, but I'm excited about picking that up too.
So do you spend most of your shifts on the floor?
Probably like half the time, you know. I'm working the info desk, directing people to the bathroom.
That's the primary question any bookstore in.
Yeah. So I do work on the floor a lot, and then just, you know, kind of like doing other stuff, doing event stuff. I host events, you know, I host readings and stuff like that a couple of nights a week.
What is it like being an author and also be a bookseller, especially with this most recent tour? How has that been?
Well, I think being an author and working in a bookstore in general is really interesting. I like people looking at my book or buying my book while I'm working.
Has that happened to you?
It does happen sometimes. It's very it's very funny because sometimes I'll try not to like say anything about it. But every once in a while,
have you rung up a customer was like buying your book?
Yeah, a few times, and and that's always funny because I usually don't say anything. Unless they look really cool, then I'll say like, "Hey, you know, like, hey, this
good
is
good choice.
Yeah, good job, buddy." Sometimes the cashier next to me will be like ringing up one of my books, and they'll be like, "Hey, you should get this guy to sign this for you."
You sign it, John Smith,
something like that.
See, I can't even hold back when like people are buying the authors that I love.
Oh yeah. No, I totally talked that up. Yeah, it's like, oh, this is so good. Yeah,
you've made the right decision.
Yeah, especially if it's something from like my small press section or, from some obscure author that I don't think anyone pays attention to. It's like, oh, I'm so glad you're buying this. So.
What is your go-to hand sell, the thing that you would give most people?
I would say probably in the past couple of years, one of my big hand sells has been A Complicated Kindness by Miriam Taves. She's a Canadian author, and it came out, it's been out for like maybe 10 years, I guess, now. You know, it's written from the point of view of this teenage girl, and she kind of wants to leave her small Mennonite community, but she really loves her dad, and so she's like torn about that. But she really wants to just go to New York and hang out with Lou Reed, you know.
We all feel that sometimes.
Yeah, and she just has this really beautiful, funny, warm writing style. Oh, it's like one of my favorite books ever. I love that book so much. And Miriam herself is so awesome. You know, it's funny when you read a book that you just really fall in love with, it just stays with you, and you just always have an author crush on that author, and you just always tell people about that book. You know, almost everyone I recommend that book to comes back and says, like, oh, I love that book so much. And her newest book is also super good.
All My Puny Sorrows.
Yeah, All My Puny Sorrows, yeah. AMPS. Yeah, that's so good. But that's a big one. A lot of times when people ask me, like, what my favorite book is ever, or my favorite author.
That's such a hard question.
It is. Yeah, it is hard.
It's a terrible question.
The other ones that I talk about when people ask that kind of thing is this book by Gary Lutz, who's like probably my favorite short story writer ever. His book, Stories in the Worst Way, is probably my favorite book ever. Really awesome, crazy, like, strange short stories, very short stories. Just a really, like, one of a kind writer, like, really amazing. And also Sam Lipsight. I love his stuff. He's so funny. Homeland is what the one that I recommend to people probably first off. It's like a guy writing into his high school newsletter, you know, and he's like 30 something, and he's kind of like, he's kind of angry about stuff, and super, super funny. Yeah, really great. So those are like my sort of go-tos, you know.
So you are the kind of impetus for the impossible hand cell question.
Yeah,
because
Tampa.
You gave me Tampa, and I was like, what the fuck does Kevin think of me while I was reading Tampa?
Well, I think I just knew that you liked kind of strange, dark stuff. I could tell you had no fear.
And like, but like, if you give that to a customer and you're like, hey, I think you'll really like this, they're going to be like, I don't...
what do you think of me?
Yeah. So what are the books that you love but you have trouble selling to people? Is there anything you, like, you just can't quite explain it enough to a customer to be able to get them on board with what you think they will love?
I guess, you know, I mean, Gary Lutz and Sam Lipsight kind of fall into that category a little. Sometimes I just don't really know if people are into that kind of level of, like, weirdness and darkness. And so sometimes I kind of hold back, but I'll say, like, oh, like, you know, have you read George Saunders, or have you read, you know, like, Lydia Davis, or, you know, I get especially excited if someone comes up and says, like, oh, I really liked this book by Barry Hannah or Donald Ray Pollock, or, you know, these people. And it's like, oh, okay, so you've done that, and you've gone that far into your psyche. So let me show you Tampa, or, you know, like, you know, things like that. Subject matter wise, it can be a little hard to sell certain things. Like, there's a book called Tiger Tiger, which is sort of like a pedophile memoir thing. It's really dark. Sort of in that same school would be Diary of a Teenage Girl, which is the graphic novel. And that's maybe a little tougher too, because there's, you know, there's pictures. You know, it's like a graphic novel, so it's like there's
more,
like,
graphic.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, it's like creepier because you have these images that you're looking at. I tend to like stuff that's like kind of weird like that, and really dark, you know. Like, I even like books like about serial killers and, like, you know, like that sort of, like, true crime stuff, you know. I mean, I guess it's not really that far off from people reading really grisly, like, mysteries, murder mysteries, or whatever.
I'm curious, how do you choose what to read next? I feel like as a bookseller, there's always just way too much to read. You've got so much backlist, and then you've got all the books that are coming out that sound awesome.
And you're publishing,
like,
shit, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know, and there's a lot of backlist that I'm like, oh, I should read that. Like.
Yeah.
I finally read, like, Fahrenheit 451, like, 3 years ago. You know.
So good.
And you're like, oh yeah, this is really good.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know really how much rhyme or reason goes into it. It's basically just kind of like what falls into my lap. And if I open it up and get sucked into it because it has short chapters,
yeah,
you know,
that really
whatever.
Is helpful.
Yeah, like the Jenny Ophiel book.
I finished that in like less than a day.
Yeah, I love that book because it's really short chapters it kind of reminded me of my book a little bit, you know.
Do you, if you pick up a book, do you have to finish it?
I do feel obligated to, but I've been able to kind of let go of books sometimes if I'm not super into it, you know. Like,
yeah.
I will put books down.
I mean, you have to.
In the past few years, yeah.
I don't really understand people who, like, don't. I was on vacation with my family, and my mom was reading this book that she just hated, and she said, like, I'm just gonna read every other page and finish it. Like, but that's you funny. Could also just stop. Like, I brought 8 books with me. You could read one of those.
That's funny.
So, there's the whole concept of, like, the desert island books that you take with you, right? Like, the... If you could take 5 books or 5 records or whatever the fuck to a desert island, I think that's boring. So in Station 11, they have very limited space. So what is, like, kind of the desperate desert island book, the one that you would have to bring with you even if you can't, like, hang out on a beach and read it with Rojito?
I guess in a way it would be Stories in the Worst Way, just because it's so full of great sentences, and I don't really reread stuff very often, you know. I have to be really drawn to something to pick it up again and look at it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there has to be a certain sort of magic to it, I guess, that makes me actually reread parts of it. Maybe even like Ben Marcus's first book, The Age of Wire and String, which I thought was super inventive, and I kind of like that. If I'm going to reread something, it's because maybe it has a little bit of intrigue or, like, mystery to me, you know? Because I'm, like, trying to figure out, like, how did they do that, you know? How did they create this strange thing and make it work? You know, poetry kind of fits into that category. Mm-hmm.
That's my go-to.
Emily Kendall Fry's Sorrow Arrow. I love Sharon Olds. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's, like, a real artful, mysterious quality to a lot of her work as well. I don't know. I guess those would be... maybe, like, an anthology. I would cheat and
do,
like, an anthology or something. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so let's do some shout-outs. Favorite bookstore other than Powell's?
I would say there's a couple. I really love Skylight Books in Los Angeles. I also really like... in New York, I really love McNally Jackson. I was super impressed by their stock when I went in there, and I was pleasantly surprised that they carried a lot of, like, really cool small press stuff. Kind of like similar stuff that I carry at Powell's, and they carried, like, Future Tense stuff, which is always good. There's Reading Frenzy, which is a really great little store in Portland.
So, besides bookstores, what's your favorite literary media? Podcasts or websites or literary magazines? Other small presses?
Actually, I don't listen to that many podcasts. I think probably just because of lack of time. But I really do like the Other People podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That's really
good.
I was on there, yeah. And he has, like, a lot of great small press authors on there all the time.
That's by Brad Listy.
Yeah.
Who does The Nervous Breakdown.
Yeah, and I like his monologues a lot, actually. I think his monologues are always really interesting.
He's very funny and strange.
Yeah, yeah.
I like him a lot.
And probably my favorite literary journal is actually the one that Diane Williams edits, called Noon. I just love so much stuff that she publishes in there. She always publishes really great kind of unusual short little fictions.
Nice. Okay, last few questions, I guess. The last book you gifted.
I was just sending a package, actually, to a friend of mine who's a writer. She lives in LA. Her name is Meredith Alling. And I just sent her, or I'm about to send her a package, just like a fun little package of stuff. And one of the little books in it is, it's been like our best-selling small press book at Powell's for the past 2 years. It's this book called The Do-It-Yourself Guide to Fighting the Big Motherfucking Sad. and it's by Adam Gennady.
That sounds amazing.
It's really amazing. We've sold probably like hundreds of these little books. It's like this little $7 book, and it's sort of like this kind of quasi inspirational self-helpy kind of book, you know, of just these different things, like just kind of flipping through it. There's like, you know, how to feel alive for the price of a match, DIY guide to killing off all boredom, find the life you want and then fight until it's yours, you know, don't waste your time, do-it-yourself guide to dealing with your critics / the haters.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just like these really great little, you know, mini essay things, basically just telling you to do cool stuff and be inspired and do stuff that inspires other people. It's really awesome.
That looks great.
Yeah. He's great. He used to live in Portland for a long time, and then he lives in Kansas now.
Like you do?
And
no, I guess.
Yeah. And him and his partner or wife live on some big farm, and they run this little publishing company. And they publish a lot of really, really great stuff. In fact, back to the transgender thing, they published a super good transgender book, a memoir. It's by this guy that I've known for a long time, but he uses a different name for the book. It's called Dear Shane, a Mental Health Resource About Staying Alive by Craig Kelly. It was a zine originally. He published it, self-published it as a zine a couple of years ago. It may have been when you were working at Powell's. And I think we sold quite a few of it, and I just really liked it. And actually, what's funny, this even goes back to the Zoe Trope thing. The reason I know this person, Craig Kelly, who goes by a different name, was because he was friends with Zoe Trope.
Oh, nice.
When her chapbook came out. And she became friends with this person because they sent her a fan letter or something.
There you go. Wow.
And she became really good friends with them, and that's how I knew this person.
It's funny how small the literary world is.
Yeah.
Way to bring all of that back around. That was
really good place to end.
Retail hard libraries trying to find me. That shit crack. That shit crack. That shit crack.
Let's actually end on that. And we will try to have everything that was mentioned in here listed in the show notes. Kevin, where are you found on the internet? Where can people find you?
Yeah.
I have a regular website that's kevinsamsoul.com that has like stuff about writing and just general stuff, and I usually try to update it every month or so.
Nice.
Then I'm also on Twitter at kevinsamsoul, and there's futuretensebooks.com, which is the small press that I run. The ebook series is Instant Future, and that has a separate website called thisisinstantfuture.com, and I also have a collage Tumblr called kevinsampsolcollages.tumblr.com. And yeah,
there you go.
I just followed you guys on Tumblr.
Sweet. You have like 20 followers on Tumblr, so
you're one of two dozen.
Cool.
Kevin, thank you so much for talking with us.
Yeah thank
this
you
was,
it's fun.
A lot of fun, so.
Yeah.
Just gotta edit the shit out of it.
Oh yeah, no, we will, don't worry. This is the magic of drunk booksellers, is that it's drunk and then it gets edited, and then it sounds a little less drunk sometimes.
I am now marking my page, don't want a crease on my page, don't let me forget this page, don't let me forget this page. I am now marking my page, don't want a crease on my page, don't let me forget this page, don't want to forget this page. I got bookmarks at home, but I forgot one for the road.
I have a bookmark that I can loan.
Know how many bookmarks I own? I am now marking my page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Don't let me forget this page. Page.